up next on the Common Free Podcast, CEO of Winning Profile, Gary Russell.
So the same type of mindset was, we'll draft him 199th in the draft in the sixth round. We couldn't have gotten it more wrong. But we look for simplicity of physicality as being the answer for everything that we do.
You're listening to the Common Free Podcast with your host, Pooja Model. In this podcast, we deliver timeless wisdom to help you calmly pursue your greatest self and a life of meaning in an ever-changing, fast-paced world. Welcome to the Calm and Free Podcast.
Gary Russell is the CEO of Winning Profile, a company that helps identify talent and how to maximize performance by focusing on the heart and the mind rather than just the external optics. He's worked with world-class athletes, the NFL, and Team Great Britain prior to the 2021 Olympics. Everyone can see and recognize exceptional performance, says Gary, but we have trouble selecting and, most importantly, reproducing it. I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with this very practiced, experienced, and wise coach, leader, and counselor. If you've been enjoying these episodes, please text or email today's episode to someone you love and tell them to subscribe so we can continue to share these life lessons on finding calm and redefining success with many more people. Without further ado, Gary Russell. Thank you so much, Gary, for joining us today. You are the CEO of Winning Profile, which helps identify talent and also helps people harness their full potential, whether that be in business, in sports, or in life. And you have this brilliant equation: talent plus skills plus knowledge equals performance. And of course, we're trying to maximize performance. And to me, talent is really the X factor, right? It's the thing that we can't see, the inner workings, if you will, of an individual that may go unnoticed by the individual himself or herself. And you've come up with a way to profile that and help people see that better, understand, be more self-aware. I'd love it if we can start by you really just giving us a Cliff Notes version of how that works.
Well, I think we could stop the presentation now because you did a great job introducing what I do. I appreciate that. I would say probably what I do is very different than the outside world. And you know, if I asked you a simple question, if a phone rings, what do you do?
Pick it up.
If someone gains weight, what do you tell them to do?
That's a little harder.
It is a little harder. We usually tell people to go on a diet or lose weight. Someone commits a crime, what do?
Put them in jail.
And all of those things that I just asked you lead us up to where we are right now. It's mindset. It's a way of thinking about things and how do you fix them. So what we know now about a phone is it's actually made to make sure that you don't answer it until you look to see who it is. And we all had people that, oh no, I don't want to talk to Aunt Tilly. No, not now. And we just click it off. But we were led to believe, and I'm going to tie this into sport in a second, we were led to believe that the ringing caused us to pick up the phone. And of course, if it rings long enough, we all want to pick up the phone because it's driving us nuts. Why does a baby cry? Because it works. It's that simple. But it isn't just that simple to fix it if we've had a child. So let's go to modern day today. We've spent the last 100 years trying to simplify behavior, but we've done it from the maladies of us, the things that don't work. So we have a word for everything now that's wrong with us: schizophrenia, bipolar,
yes,
you name it. We have a name for it, but we don't have a name for positive phenomena Like if you and I get along really well, we click, or we mesh, or we gel. Or in sport, if a team really accentuates itself, it's team chemistry. Now, I don't know about you, when I was in high school, that was the last thing I wanted to take because I wasn't smart enough to figure it out. So I often think, are we up there with test tubes with chemistry? We don't know what it is. So my search has been, what is it? So let me give you a modern day example with Tiger Woods. And this idea now that our mindset is coming out into the world of positive psychology, right in the world where you are in terms of wellness and mindset. We're still trying to figure that out. So when positive psychology was introduced, I'll say 20 years ago, roughly speaking, Tiger Woods was about 6 years of age, and he was a phenom. He was just unbelievable. And his dad, Earl, was his coach. And at a press conference, they asked Earl, are you his coach? And he said, yes. And they said, well, are you a pro player? And he went, no. And they said, well, no, with no disrespect, but how are you going to get Tiger at the top of his game? And he said, this is a true story. He said, well, one thing I won't do is let any of you coach my son. And they said, really? Why is that? And he said, well, let me give you an example. He said, Tiger's not very good at hitting out at the ball out of the bunker, sand trap. What would you people do? All the hands in the audience shot up and they said, remember, phone rings, put him in the bunker. In fact, I put him in the bunker until his hands bled so he'd get better at it. And so Earl smiled and he said, well, see, that's exactly why you'll never get to coach my son. Well, I said, well, what do you do with him? And he said, well, he's really good at hitting the ball down the fairway, so I'm going to let him practice that all day, which is 180 degrees from what we used to think we do. Same way now in Connecticut, people go to jail and we're actually teaching the inmates how to use the keys. Now, most people think of that and go, are you serious? Well, we're not talking about Jack the Ripper giving him the keys, but we're talking about a lot of people who have made mistakes and need to find a way out. And if they're coming out, we should be glad that they're learning how to be responsible. So in sport, we now know that we used to get something out of punishment, but we'd be better off now helping people with discipline and taking responsibility. You know, another one I could have asked you is that when someone's depressed and feeling blue, what do we say? Cheer up. Yeah, it's great advice, but it doesn't work because it's not that simple to figure it out.
Yes.
So if I may, let me tell you another story because I know you wanted me to chat with you about a little bit with Tom Brady. And now that he's retired as of today, I don't know if I can keep using this story, but I've gotten a lot of mileage out of this. But when he was in University of Michigan, the NFL, who I work with now, asked him to come to a combine, which is where they bring the best people in. And out of that comes the NFL draft. And Tom said, look, I'll be glad to come, but I just want you to know I can't run. That's not my strength. And they said, that's all right, come anyhow. So sure enough, during the combine, they spend 98% of the time working on physicality, nothing on this and nothing on their heart, emotions. So after the combine, they wrote him up and said, beware to all the teams. This guy can't run. So the same type of mindset was, we'll draft him 199th in the draft in the sixth round. Yeah. We couldn't have gotten it more wrong. But we look for simplicity of physicality as being the answer for everything that we do. Malcolm Gladwell just wrote a book called Talking to Strangers. And it's all about, we think we know what we're looking at when we look at it, but we really don't, because the only thing we're looking at is one third of behavior, which is physicality. It's not bad, but it doesn't tell you what Tom Brady has up here or in here.
Yes.
Totally missed it. I'll shut up for a minute. Does that make sense?
What a great book to bring up a way to thread this discussion. You know, Tom Brady, as you might have known, was in my English class.
I didn't know.
At the University of Michigan. And he sat in the back of the room with his letter jacket on the entire semester. I don't think he said one word. And little would I know then at that time that 15 years down the road, I'd be watching him every, you know, weekend on television, breaking records. This idea that the mental side and the emotional side are really the crux of our external performance is the topic of discussion and what is so important to identify. Someone like Tim Tebow, for example, is a great juxtaposition to Tom Brady. He had everything we thought he needed in a football player, but he has now fizzled out. What was the difference between Tom and Tim? And that's really the what we need to uncover. What is your thoughts on how coaching is now performed today to better identify that? Is it getting better in the professional leagues?
I think it's getting better, but I still feel we're almost back in the 1600s when it comes to the majority. So you see parents who want their children to succeed, so they put them in sport at age 5 and start looking for scholarships for major universities by the age of 6. And it just doesn't work that way. There's a developmental process to this whole thing. What I did in my research to find out the differences between a Tim Tebow and a Tom Brady, and this is what I'm trying to help organizations figure out now, because the research says we're only hiring 1 out of 5 people correctly.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but if I took 20% home to my mom and dad on a score of my test, I probably would have never gotten out of the house again. It's not good. We're just not good at it. And the reason is that we only use optics. So I studied neurology to figure out how can we delineate the differences between human beings. We know they're different. You can see that. But a lot of those differences have caused an awful lot of prejudice. Male, female, men have to be better. I mean, that's a load of nonsense. Different countries that I worked in that feel inferior to another country or different religions.
Yes.
And we've done that because we don't get to the real answer of what's causing our differences. So in studying neurology, we found that if we're really interested in behavior, which is more than actions, where does our mental and emotional capacity come from? Well, I didn't do the studies, but the studies were very simple. Well, not simple, but they're simple now as I explain them, that they realized that children's heads were bigger than their bodies when children are born. And they realized that there was an overabundance of neurons that was causing that. We now know that from pre-birth to the age of 16, those neurons begin to reduce their number because they weave themselves into what's called threads. Now you might be wondering, where does this tie in? Well, the threads ultimately become what we now know are 3 components of behavior. Our mental and cognitive talents, how we think, how we make choices, how we make decisions, which we do every millisecond of our day. How we emote. So if we attach ourselves to the outside world, to people, we now call that emotional intelligence. When I was your age, we didn't have those words, but now we have those words that help explain the relationship between people and people. If you're not like that, and you're high IQ, which is logic and rational thinking, they now have a program at Carnegie Mellon that specializes in taking people who are a high IQ in their careers, but they've gotten so far they don't go up the ladder anymore because they don't know how to relate to other human beings.
Yeah.
Now, that's not bad. It just is. I don't have a high IQ, but I think I have a very high EQ.
Yes.
But if you put me in a lab where I have to put together the next rocket that's going to go into space, we're not going to have a lot of success there because I don't have the talent to do it. And the third area is physicality, which is not sport, but it's how do we physically handle ourselves in a work setting or a coaching setting, and how do we handle pressure? So after studying that, I thought, well, all the other instruments that I've looked at, which I won't mention by name, that were trying to create an impression of a person's personality and so on, I was never happy with them because I thought they were too linear. Just like phone rings, you pick it up, person commits a crime, put them in jail. We can't build jails fast enough in this country to handle everybody that's making mistakes. It's like when people gain weight, put them on a diet. We have more diets, physical fitness programs than we've ever had, but our country is heavier now than it's ever been. So it's not that simple to say it's physicality, which is what they did with Tom. And we're still doing it in the draft now. We have the quarterback for the Seattle Hawks picked in the third round. He's hardly a third round quarterback, but we're only looking at physicality. So our thinking, our mindset, which ties into our mindset of wellness and our well-being, is all tied into getting what we do is to one, profile a person to figure out what is their talent profile. Then we teach them that profile, as we did with Olympians or Morgan Stanley, it makes no difference. And then teach them how to use those talent themes to create what we call alignment, which getting your thinking, your mental, emotional, and actionable things consistently in line. So when you do that, you actually can maximize the talent you have. That doesn't mean that Gary can go down and work at Cape Kennedy and fix the rockets. No, what it means is I can find a place in this world that my talents can be used in a very effective way. Now, if we just did that, we measure engagement in this country, which is our mental and emotional feelings about where we work. And we have the highest rate in the world. Ours is 37%, I think, the last time I looked at it. Now, again, if I brought a paper home and had 37%, that's better than 20 or 25%, but mom's still not going to let me out. I'm not doing well. So we don't even know how to take care of our employees through engagement. So when I developed this program, we did a number of test place where we'd go in and profile, let's say 500 people in a $14 billion business, 36,000 employees, but this one place had 500 employees, 35 store leaders, if you will. And we took the profile to teach everybody what their profile was. Then we developed a program that creates alignment and what I call activation or engagement. And we taught people how to use that energy within themselves to align their three components of the behavior. We then measured their engagement, which at that point was 66 out of 100. We're climbing up the ladder with these numbers a little bit. And I got them to realize that every percentage of engagement that they climbed the ladder, it translated into the P&L statement. When I first introduced the idea, I think they were all going, where is this strange guy coming from? Well, in 4 months, we increased the level of engagement by 13 points, which raised the P&L statement up about $1.5 million.
Wow.
Then the bean counters began to say, well, maybe there's something here. And there is. So that's the type of work I do with athletes. It's the type of work I do with businesses. And I think I mentioned to this when I first met you, I honestly believe at some point workman's comp will be linked to workman's well-being. Because once employers learn it, I don't believe employers are trying to make things difficult. I think they just don't know how to do it better. So my job, I like to think our job, whoever's listening to this, is to help teach people how to make it better. And now we have a system and a structure and science and evidence to back it up. And I got goosebumps just telling you that.
Yes. It's beautiful, this idea of finally putting value on the heart and the mind, and especially the heart. And from listening to you, it makes me think about that movie with Brad Pitt, Billy Bean, who got this young guy to come in and pull out all these statistics of these players to try to craft the best team. But what he didn't take into account was the heart or the mind.
Exactly.
And we still do that today in the corporate world, where we look at the resume. And the resume is similar to baseball statistics.
Yes.
And there's nothing in that resume that can alert us to the potential and the value of the mind or the heart of the employee. So it's really such profound knowledge and discussion this is that you're bringing to the table. Thank you so much for your life's work on this, and for really making people aware of it. I want to talk a little bit about the static nature of the mind and the emotions. In your mind, is that static, or can we change it? And obviously, there's been so much in positive psychology over the years with Dr. Carol Dweck and the growth mindset, and this idea that we can coach people to, through knowledge and through techniques, different practices, to think of failure as helpful, to be able to understand that their abilities are not fixed, that they can grow, that they can change, they can improve. What are your thoughts on coaching this to become better?
Well, we better set up another three podcasts to answer this. But, you know, my background is working with alcoholics, drug addicts. And back then, I did that before I had the research, but I always believed that there was something inside of us that could help us correct our trajectory.
Yes.
Now I have evidence to show that. When I studied neurology, we studied the idea of neuroplasticity, and we used to believe, that once you're a criminal, you're always a criminal. I could go on and on with analogies because it's simpler. It just seems like it's the answer because I don't have to think very hard to create it. But now with neuroplasticity, we're talking about neurons, or the weaving that I talked about, is movable. Now, if we take talent as height, and I tried out for the New York Knicks and they need me to play center, that physicality of neuroplasticity is not going to go from 5'8" to 7 feet tall. It's just not going to happen. And that's the way we look at working with an athlete, for example. So we were able to take Olympians who had talent themes a little lower than what we thought the best had, and we measured both. So we were able to coach talent themes within their profiles to get them to become more competitive, higher achievers, better able to relate in a team. All the things that we just think were set. We've actually developed what we call now human analytics, which is the ability to profile, let's say, 1,000 people in a company and figure out all of the permutations of everybody's talent themes. And if you were the person that was leaving this company, God forbid, but if you were, and we needed another you, we could take 1,000 profiles and within a click now, just like Moneyball, tell you who has the closest profile to you. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to be the most successful, but at least it gives us a good idea of where to start and picking the right person. In the past, as you said, we look at a resume. Then we do an interview, which we just talked about with Malcolm Gladwell, says doesn't work.
Yeah.
You choose something based on those things. We're getting 1 out of 5 of those correct. So we're introducing information now, inside information, that would help people make better decisions for athletes. I would love to work with teachers, because I taught grad school for years, but teachers were not aware of learning theory. I'm thinking, you're not aware of learning theory. What are you doing in the classroom? And the same way with coaching. If you're coaching, you just can't look at a child and say, work harder. Or a person who's depressed and feels lonely, just say, we'll get over it. You know, just go do something and you'll feel better. It's not that simple. But if you understand this technology that we've created internally, it becomes simpler because you actually have something you can coach.
Yes.
As opposed to cheer up. I mean, that's a nice thought, but it just doesn't work. And that's where, you know, the expression that hope isn't a strategy.
Yeah.
Hope is needed because it's an emotion that gives some credibility to something. But you got to put some science and other things behind it to make that hope come true, if you will. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. I want to talk a little bit about perhaps something a little bit out of your orbit, but I'm sure you have some great insight on it. In the sports world, again, we have seen over the last couple years, many performers talking about anxiety. So there's been Naomi Osaka, we've seen Michael Phelps, we've seen Simone Biles most recently in the Olympics talk about a mental block. And this too is new to the sports world. Before, perhaps it wasn't talked about. It was kind of swept under the rug. And now with this idea of mental wellness, mental well-being coming to the forefront, we're seeing more athletes talk about their struggles. And of course, performance enhancement has a lot to do with your ability to deal with pressure, to deal with stress, to deal with anxiety, which comes up, especially in today's world, in every field of life, every place, business, sports, life in general. I want to bring up this beautiful quote by Coach John Wooden. He talks about this idea of focusing on the journey versus the destination. And I'm bringing this up because when you think about that, it helps relieve anxiety. A lot of these athletes are stuck in this destination obsession. I have to get to this mark, be ranked at this level, go to the Olympics in this year. And everything is about the destination when they forget about the journey. So here's Coach Wooden's quote, "The journey is better than the in." I think the game is the in. And the journey is the practices. So Coach Wooden essentially never really thought about winning. He never thought much about the actual game. His enjoyment, enthusiasm, and focus was always on the practice, the everyday practice. And to him, the in would just come. You'd finally get to the in at some point. But you don't need to think about it every day, and it doesn't have to consume you, and you don't have to be obsessed about it. He actually told his players, he never told them, talk to them about winning. This is a very kind of famous thread of his coaching philosophy. What is your thought on this, and have you seen it and discussed it with some of the people you've worked with in the past?
Well, again, I feel like you're reading my mind, because when I develop what I've developed and I call it a winning profile, I have to very quickly clarify winning isn't the end result. Winning is a journey, as he said, and it's a process. The methods that we've developed now to help people to use their talent, which is called alignment and activation, are two human processes that we've developed to maximize those things within people. That's why I was able to go in 4 months to change engagement scores by 12 points, which ultimately changed the P&L statement. Most people who come into a business are trying to change the P&L statement. And they look at all the workers and say, just work harder and we'll get there. No, it's not that simple. The journey is so crucial to the end result. And in my way of thinking, it's better as best. There's never an end. It's always something better than yesterday. And it's about working. So when you look at our formula, which is T plus K plus S equals performance, the K and the S is all about knowledge and skills. It's the things that you learn. It's the application you put to them. If they are put with the right talent in terms of the activity, basketball, cycling, hedge funds, whatever, then you maximize the person's potential to be good at the K and the S, not just with a resume. You put the human being as the key factor in that equation. And if you do that more successfully, so let's suppose instead of get a 1 out of 5, right? We got 5 out of 5, right? For a person being chosen to have the right talent to do the right job. That's automatically going to raise the engagement scores up because people are going to feel better about themselves.
Yes.
What worries me today, and the pandemic has brought this out, is the amount of depression and the mindset of people, the worry and suicide, because people don't know how to handle it. And by us telling them to cheer up, again, it's a nice thing to say to someone, but that it's not good enough. Suicide is reorganizing your life. Doing something other than suicide is redirecting your life, taking the existing things that are in you and rearranging them like we did with an Olympian to get a better performance. But a person taking their life has gotten to the end of the rope. I don't know what to do to redirect. I worked with a gentleman from LA years ago, Dr. William Glasser, who said, I don't believe that if I could ask someone who committed suicide after I woke them back up, they'd do it again. They don't want to leave the world. They don't want to leave their loved ones, but they don't know what else to do. I believe it's my responsibility, our responsibility, to help teach people how to figure out what else to do. There is a better way. But if I don't understand what's going on in here and here, I'm guessing. And I'm looking at physicality as the answer. And what happens in our world today, physicality becomes the answer by substance. That's the answer. I drink, I take a drug. And that relieves the pain perhaps for a bit, but the reality comes back of how to cope with what I'm going through. And the average person, that's probably me, very average, by the way, but the average person doesn't know this information to yeah. use it in a way that's helpful. So at some point, although I'm a terrible writer, I need to write all this down and get it out so that people can hear it and learn how to handle each other better. We're in dire need. I've worked with some people who are working in the armed forces trying to help suicide rates here because it's horrible. The rates are awful. And they, too, are in programs where they lecture to these officers, enlisted people, to try to tell them how not to be suicidal. The phone rings and we answer it. Telling people what to do is not the answer.
Yes.
We have to be able to help them internalize what's happening so that they can be taught how to use that internalization to improve themselves as well as the people around them.
Yes, absolutely. And this is part of the inner education that we discussed the last time we met, which isn't taught in school, that inner education. Thank you so much, Gary, for spending the time with me today.
Good seeing.
Thanks everybody for listening, and I hope you enjoy that very special conversation. You can learn more about Gary by visiting his website, winningprofile.com, and following him on LinkedIn. Wishing all of you a great, peaceful, calm week ahead. Next up, we will be talking to Luke Burgess, author of the book, Wanting. You really don't want to miss this one, where we investigate why we want what we want and how to free ourselves from wanting what doesn't fulfill us. If you love episodes like this one and want to learn more about how to find calm in your life and the freedom to be your best, Join my newsletter over on LinkedIn and at our website, calmandfreepodcast.com, or via our social channels. Thanks as always to Charlene at GoTo Productions and Jessica Panian for art design and graphics. And please email or text this episode to someone you love.